Let me welcome the two speakers on this tutorial session on wireless microphones. They're both from Sennheiser Electronics Company. Volker Schmidt, who is the first presenter, is an experienced professional in the realm of wireless RF technology. Mr. Schmidt moved to Sennheiser US headquarters in 2006 to take a position as senior engineer for wireless equipment. Over a period of 8 years, Mr. Schmidt's development team designed and introduced the popular Evolution Wired, Evolution Wireless, MKH, MKE series, and the 3000, 5000 series wireless products. Mr. Schmidt returned to the corporate headquarters in 2008 and worked as director in the professional systems division before joining Sennheiser. Mr. Schmidt worked for over 10 years at Matsushita, well known for the Panasonic, Techniques, and Quasar brands, developing video and audio products. Mr. Schmidt earned a master's degree in electrical engineering, specializing in RF and communications. And the second speaker is Mr. Joe Ciaudelli. Mr. Ciaudelli is Director of Spectrum Affairs for Sennheiser USA. Upon graduating from Columbia University with an electrical engineering degree, Joe was hired by Sennheiser in 1987. He has served in various capacities, including Director of Marketing, Director of Market Development and Education, and Director of Advanced Projects and Engineering. Joe also holds 3 patents in holographic technology. And moreover, these two gentlemen are good friends. They know each other well and very often present together. So we are very lucky to have them here. Thank you so much. Let's welcome.
Thank you. Despite the fact that I said Joe will start, I will start. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for having us. Really appreciate that. As you can hear from my accent, I'm German. And Peter, I promise you one thing, I try to be more speech intelligible today, because the good thing is you can see me. So we split this presentation in 2 parts. Joe will start with Spectrum, Spectrum Affairs, Spectrum things which are essential for us in the wireless microphone world. So, and we are talking sound reinforcement. I'm impressed how much, during only the first 2 hours, I was impressed how much I don't know. That's great, learning a lot. So we would like to put something on top of that. And I promise you one thing, the first part which Joe will present is really depressing. Joe, and afterwards it's so much fun, so when I'm doing my stuff. So I hand over to the very depressed, esteemed friend, Joe Ciaudelli.
Hi, thanks for having me. We're going to cover a lot of ground, so I'm going to go quickly, but I'll be here for 3 days if anyone has any questions for me. So a lot is changing regarding the use of frequencies for wireless mics. Wireless microphones use a radio frequency to transport an audio signal. The frequencies that are used for wireless mics these days are generally UHF. And that's because UHF is kind of the sweet spot or the beachfront property within the RF landscape. If you go to lower frequencies, if you go to much lower frequencies, then you have to use very long antennas on your transmitters and receivers. If you go to much higher frequencies, such as the 2.4 gigahertz range up in the microwave area, then the wavelength is much shorter, and that wave is more easily blocked and doesn't penetrate through walls or foliage nearly as well. So everyone wants to use UHF because of the great wave propagation characteristics. Here's another reason, in that you don't need a lot of power to go a good distance. Let's say you want to, let's say you're operating at 100 megahertz. That's a typical FM radio signal, kind of like this is K-Rock, 102.7 megahertz. Okay, if you want to send that signal about 1 kilometer, all you need is about 4 to 5 milliwatts of power. Okay, if you want to send a UHF signal about 500 megahertz, which is this green line, then you need about between 50 and 100 milliwatts of output power to send that signal that same 1 kilohertz distance. But if you go up into the microwave range, up above, let's say, 2 gigahertz, like a 2.4 gigahertz system, then you need 1 watt to go that same distance. So this is just a couple reasons why everyone wants to use UHF for their wireless devices. So wireless microphones have been using UHF for many years, but now there's a lot of competition from other products and services that also want to use UHF. Okay, so UHF obviously is used by a lot of over-the-air TV transmission. So when we're operating a wireless mic, it's a flea-powered device compared to a TV signal. So we got to find a channel in the city we're operating in that's not being used for over-the-air TV broadcast, and that's where we put our wireless mics. Okay, years ago, there was plenty of open TV channels, open or locally vacant TV channels, also known as white space channels. That's where we want to put our wireless mics. And years ago, there was plenty of white space channels, especially that first chart shows when there was just analog TV. Those are the green lines. So we had plenty of white space channels to put our mics. There was a time when there was not only analog TV on the air, but also digital TV on the air, which made things more crowded. And about 5 years ago in the United States, all the analog channels had to shut down. And the advantage of going to a digital TV standard for over-the-air TV is you can actually put channels adjacent to each other. So you're able to get many TV channels all operating in a smaller spectrum. And that allowed the government to clear the upper UHF channels, and they basically gave them to, or auctioned them to telecom. It actually was a big windfall for the government. They were able to clear out those channels and sell the rights to use those upper channels to AT&T and Verizon for their LTE service. And this gained the US government $19 billion. You would think our taxes would have gone down, but that didn't happen. Okay, well, since that... Yes, thank you very much. So this... this was a very successful auction, and since the government loves money, they're going to have another auction next year. And so they're going to basically repurpose more of the UHF spectrum and consolidating TV into a smaller space. And therefore, there's going to be less frequencies available for wireless mics. So we need to be prepared for that. So what you should know, at least half the UHF channels, I predict, will be gone after the auction. And there'll be a big change in about 3 years. Okay? There'll still be small pockets that we can operate in. But it'll be more important that if you are eligible to operate as a licensed microphone operator for you to apply for your license so that you can get added rights and protections. And one of those is the rules for operating on an active TV channel have changed, and they'll probably change again for licensed operators. So there'll be additional frequency bands outside of UHF that will likely become available to mics. We're in discussions right now in the United States with the FCC. But spectrum sharing with other devices and other services is going to be the new norm. So once again, there's going to be a clear distinction between licensed mic operation and unlicensed. Okay, unlicensed doesn't always equate to professional. A lot of professional productions are being done operating in an unlicensed fashion. But if you are eligible for a license, this will give you priority over unlicensed devices and unlicensed users, and you can also use higher power devices. Okay, previously only broadcasters could be licensed, but in the United States now large sound companies and theaters can also be licensed. So why is this going to be important? Because within a few years, we're going to see a whole crop of new devices called white space devices that will be used for all kinds of networking activity. And right now, you're finding these pop up in a lot of college campuses, where it's basically, you can think of it like a local mini TV network for broadband operations within a localized area. So the fixed devices, they're kind of like Wi-Fi points. These devices, personal portables, which will be kind of almost like a cell phone type device, they're not on the market yet, but within a few years, there's likely to be thousands, if not millions, of these devices. So the good news is that as a licensed microphone operator, you'll be able to register for protection for against these white space devices using a geolocation database. So you'll be able to go to a website and register your production for protection. Okay, so let's say you're doing a production in Manhattan. You can register your production so that you're protected from portable white space devices and even more from fixed white space devices. If you are doing a festival with multiple stages, you can actually have register for all the stages, and you can register for different types of geographic areas with different types of polygons. So that's going to be an important right and privilege for licensed operators. A lot of people who are eligible to get a license right now have never applied because there hasn't been a real compelling reason. But in the future, when there's going to be fewer channels and more devices vying to use those empty white space channels, this will become vital for wireless professionals. Okay? So as I mentioned, the next year in the United States, there's going to be another auction which is going to repurpose more TV channels and make them unavailable to over-the-air TV and therefore also wireless microphones. So basically, they call it the incentive auction because the FCC is telling the over-the-air TV broadcaster, hey, over-the-air TV, you know, it's getting less and less popular. Here's a chance to sell your license or give up your license and either go off the air or you can move or share a channel with another TV channel if you're only operating at standard def rather than high def. And if you do that, we'll auction your channel for you and we'll give you a piece of the pie. So then they're going to turn to the telecom companies and say, hey, these broadcasters are willing to sell their license. What are you willing to pay for it? So what's going to happen is, here is kind of a, let's say, a chart of the UHF channels from 14 to channel 51. These dark blue are full-power TV channels. You don't want to operate a wireless microphone there, because once again, we're a flea-powered device, and they'll just squash us, okay? The light blue, maybe that's a low-power channel or a distant channel. If you're, you can probably operate a wireless microphone there, especially if your production is indoors, okay? Right now in the United States, there are two channels that are reserved for wireless microphone use, but they're going to go away. Then there's the other channels, which are the white space channels, which are currently shared between mics and white space devices. But there's not a lot of white space devices out in the market now. But in a few years, this white space channel will get a little grayer because there'll be a lot more white space channels. But after the auction, this is what's going to happen to the UHF spectrum. Some channels will go off the air. Others will be moved to lower channels, congesting the lower channels more, and there'll be very few channels to operate wireless microphones in the UHF spectrum. There'll be these little small pockets within what's called guard bands that we can operate, but it'll be under different rules. So, the good thing is that the government realizes that you need wireless microphones. So we are in discussions to getting access to additional pieces of spectrum. But there are all kinds of details and caveats and encumbrances with all of these frequency ranges. But these are some of the frequency ranges that are in discussion now that will probably be open to wireless microphones. I went over a lot of ground in a very short time. I'm happy to go over any details, but I wanted to give my good friend Volker the ample time that he needs to talk about digital versus analog.
Thank you, Joe. Okay. What I'm trying to do now is would like to guide you a little bit through wireless microphone theory, analog, digital. We will talk about physics, and I'm not trying to get too specific for companies or whatsoever, because technology is for all of us the same. So what you will hear is my personal truth. This is not the truth in general, but I hope from the experience which I have, I can share something with you which is of importance for you. Okay. This is, by the way, one reason why I love my job. It's great parties. Okay. Here we go. Let me start with one question. First question is, can I take my jacket off? Yes, I can. Second question is, give me an idea why you want to have digital audio. And don't come with the idea, I don't want to have it. So then we would still sit on a tree and chase something like moose or whatsoever. So what do I know? So let's face the truth, we will go digital anyway. So why do you want to have digital? Digital in general, but also wireless. Yes, please. Spectrum efficiency. What else? Audio quality. Very good point. Let's talk about spectrum efficiency in a bit, because I will challenge this one. Audio quality. By the way, let's talk about audio quality, and I will challenge this. What else?
Ease of process.
Ease of process.
So predictability of audio quality.
Predictability. I will not challenge this one. Ease of process is good, because a lot of things are in favor for us. Think about audio on a wire. I'm running a fiber. It's so much easier. I'm running an IT network. I'm running this kind of infrastructure. Compared to this kind of multicore, I'm running this one. Brilliant. And then we have mixing desks and effects. Everything is digital. The entire audio chain is digital. So this gives a lot of benefits for us. It's so much easier to process it. And we can store it. We can store it much easier. Just found my old tapes at home the other day and showed it to my son. And he stared at me and said, "What? Must be broken. There is a hole in the middle." No, it's not. Different story, my son. Yes, and this is all true. So there is a general trend that we will see digital audio in the future. And if we are talking about digital wireless audio and spectrum efficiency, a lot of things we can do also in an analog domain. And I will come to this point in a bit. There is one big benefit which goes together with digital: error correction. And this is something which I cannot do in a digital domain. So this entire error correction, forward error correction, I can look back and say, hey, what should it be, and so on and so forth. This is great. I cannot do this in an analog domain. But unfortunately, this comes, it's not free of, there's no free lunch, right? So latency is the key. So and share some information with me. So what do you think is an acceptable latency in a microphone application? Wow, here is my favorite sentence. It depends. It depends on what?
What it's being used.
What's define real time.
I've got a chorus that's singing off stage in an opera.
Chorus off stage in an opera. Is this real time? Is this important?
Yes.
For whom?
Musician.
I'm questioning this. I just came back from Sydney. I went to Sydney Opera House. This side of the stage does not hear what this side of the stage is playing. And they have pretty famous musicians there. Some say, you know what, I'm not doing that. It depends very much, but you're right. So this depends, it is very important for the artist on stage. The one thing which I always bring into play here is microphone in ear. Because now you hear this one, your bone, and you hear the delayed audio from the mixing desk, the microphone, the mixing desk, and the return. Yes, please.
Somebody just recently mentioned to me that we're talking about the people who had the most difficulty with that were typically horn players, because they're feeling their instrument in their mouth and in their head, and they're hearing it delayed and phased.
And you know what? I strongly believe that's a good point. I didn't hear this, and we did some tests. I'm sorry, hopefully there is no drummer and bass player here. I had drummer in a studio, and we put some artificial delay on it. And with 4, 5, 6 milliseconds of latency, he felt, yeah, it's great, it's grooving, yeah, give it to me. And then after 10, 12 milliseconds, he starts, oh, I'm behind. Let's get faster. So it is very, very challenging, and it depends very much on the person. I promise, Eurovision Song Contest, the biggest sound competition worldwide, broadcasted on TV. This year, 250 million people on TV. I was there. We had a round-trip delay of 9.2 milliseconds. And I was sitting there as I set up the system. I said, you know what? Thank you very much. I have to retune everything. I have to go to the mixing desk guys and the splitters and the networks guy and have to back. Let's get 3, 4, 5 milliseconds out of the system. Out of 47 countries, out of 47 contestants, only one came back and said, you know what? I think there is something. No other complained at all. Isn't it interesting? So, and I'm not saying this is the norm. Some people, here in Canada, here in this city, a lady is living, Celine, so she is brilliant. She was complaining 1.2 milliseconds. And you say, is it feasible? Very difficult, because it's perception. I'm not debating that. But one thing is very clear. As soon as we are talking digital, latency is inherent. It's there. No discussion. Yes, please.
I was just going to say, there are some artists that demand an analog feed for their ears, irrespective of what band it is.
That's an interesting discussion point. So as soon as we are talking monitors and analogs, so there is basically only one company who has a digital monitoring system. The rest is analog. And think about that, like 20 years ago, we had a floor monitor sitting here, approximately 3 meters away. What is this latency? As we came onto the market with the first in-ear system, people complained that the sound is too direct. And what we did some phase shift. Okay, different. Now people are used to junk, get it directly on the ear. By the way, there is an interesting discussion which I had just recently. A very renewed sound engineer said, you know what, you want to put some echo on it. And that's not a dumb idea, because as soon as your brain is thinking, I'm sitting in a cathedral, latency is okay. Think about that. So just for the records. Okay. So I think we discussed a lot of this stuff already. So less compromise in audio quality. And this depends very much on, do you use some data reduction or not? So, and this is an interesting discussion which we cover as well. Audio codec is the key for that. Even with an audio codec, most of the time the sound quality is better than an analog system, because I don't have pre-emphasis, de-emphasis in the FM domain, and I do not use a compressor, expander, a compander in the circuitry, so which has some significant disadvantages, especially for a hi-hat, such kind of high-frequency sharp tones, very impulsive. So now with the digital system, I have the opportunity to put on a wireless, on a drum set, a wireless microphone. And now you would question, why you are doing that? It's a drum set. So we had some shows in Las Vegas where we moved in a drum set and we moved it out. So it's so easy. Now it's wireless, so that's really beneficial. Encryption. Encryption is a big thing. Spectral efficiency, if you are doing it right. I can do everything in an FM domain the same way, except error correction. And then I can increase the efficiency as well. So, but no free lunch, latency, operating time. An FM transmitter, an FM microphone is an extremely efficient device, because you are driving the RF amplifier into saturation, because you are not interested in the amplitude, how it looks like. You are just counting zero crossings, as simple as this. This is different as soon as we are talking digital, and this depends also which kind of modulation we are using. Higher cost, and believe me, it sounds silly, but I know how to design an FM transmitter, and it's the cheapest way to do it. Bill of material is unbeatable. And the missing experience, and we talk about that in a second. Okay, let's do that very fast. Ultimate goal for me would be, in a digital microphone, I want to have the best sound experience. I want to have the best sounding microphone. That sounds like a plan, right? Because a microphone should sound good. We heard about speech intelligibility, we heard about speakers, and the entrance for everything, the beginning part, is this microphone. So let's do that. Let's say we want to have the best sounding quality. So that means I have no data compression whatsoever. This is a theory. So this will result in a very high data rate. What do you think? How much data we have to push through the RF channel? Let's assume 48 kilohertz, 96 kilobit sampling rate, approximately 110, 115 dB of dynamic range, approximately 2.3 megabit per second. Now the big point comes, we have to push it through this 200 kilohertz RF window, which is the regulation. And this is the challenge. I can push this 2.4 gigahertz. The channel which I use there is 2 megahertz wide. In the UHF frequency range, it's only 200 kilohertz. Push 2.3 megabit per second through this 200 kilohertz. This is a challenge. And I will show you how you can overcome that. By the way, the 2.3 megabits is a raw data rate. So, and we have to add 1.5 times for overhead, framing, error correction, all this stuff. Okay, so high data rate. We have a high data rate if we go this path. That means I have a high RF bandwidth, which I occupy. Unfortunately, I'm not allowed to do that. So I have to go the path to say I need a complex modulation scheme. It's not an FSK or a 4FSK or a QPSK or whatsoever. No, it's much higher, much more complex. And we are talking very soon, 64 QAM or something like that, 64 constellation points. And I will show you why. So, complex modulation scheme means less robust RF transmission. Maybe someone heard about the good old Mr. Shannon? So, data rate versus signal-to-noise ratio. And let me phrase it different, carrier-to-noise ratio. And I will show you a picture in a second. Very important. So, linear RF amplifier, because I need those definition in a linear RF amplifier for the constellation points, because it's not an FM. What does it mean, linear RF amplifier? Is someone an audiophile guy here? Has a Class A amplifier at home? What is the big advantage of a Class A audio amplifier? It sounds great. I'm sorry?
It's always running flat out.
The big disadvantage is? It's hot. Power consumption. And yeah, heavy. Yeah, they put some bricks in there. So in general, it's heat, power dissipation. For an AC, audio amplifier, it's easy. AC outlet, chink, here we go. We are talking wireless microphone. Battery is in here. That means battery lifetime is the next topic, which we have to look at. So that means this is a challenge. Or you can run with your car battery. Maybe not. So anyway, so what you now, if you start to redo the circle, that's an interesting one. Because if we agree on the fact we want to have a little bit of data compression, the next one is my data rate is going down. Okay, that means my RF bandwidth is going down. I need less complex modulation scheme. That means my RF transmission is much more robust. So my linearity of the RF amplifier is going down. And I have a better battery lifetime. It's as easy as this. But my sound is not as good anymore. And here is the challenge. Here you have to find this balance. What do you want? So, and there are some products out there which have a tendency to go either, hey, I want to have a very robust, or I want to have the best sounding quality. So this is an interesting aspect of that. Okay, let's continue and have a look at modulation. Here is one important thing for me. Basically, we are talking about 3/2 modulation schemes. One is amplitude modulation. Very clear, right? So like the good old days, an AM radio, you have a carrier and you modulate this RF carrier. As simple as this. And then you have phase and frequency. The term digital modulation is wrong because it is not existing. Because on air, ladies and gentlemen, everything is analog. As simple as this. So if someone is coming up with, say, hey, what is this digital modulation? No, it's a modulation which is using digital coded words, and we are transmitting this. But on air, it is analog, period. Okay, so we talked about that, how much data rate is required. I skipped this one, approximately 2.3 megabit plus overhead, so which brings us to 3.5 megabit per second, which we have to push through this 200 kilohertz RF bandwidth in the UHF range. What you see here is something interesting. This one is an FSK, a frequency shift keying. The zero has one frequency, let's say 500 megahertz, and the one has another frequency, 501 megahertz. If you look at this, how it looks on air, it is a constant envelope like an FM signal. It is very, very similar. As the big disadvantage is, because of this very simple transmission method, I cannot push enough data through the 200 kilohertz RF bandwidth. I need more complex modulation schemes. For instance, this one. This is a QAM, a quadrature, and now listen, a quadrature amplitude modulation. And for the first time, I do not only have phase / frequency, I also have the information of the amplitude in the modulation scheme. And now it's getting tricky. If we increase the number of constellation points, the big advantage is that this number, for instance, for a 16 QAM, is 4 bits per symbol. Behind every constellation point, it's 4 bit. Let's go back to the slide before. Here, it is 1 bit per symbol. So the amount of data which I can push through this 200 kilohertz window is much lower because it's only 1 bit per symbol. So if we now go to a 64 QAM, 64 quadrature amplitude modulation, it has 6 bit per symbol. That means I have a tremendous amount of data which I can put through this 200 kilohertz. Interesting now is, I have here a lot of constellation points which are close together. The receiver has to detect exactly the right position, phase, amplitude, and now demodulate this. This is easy in this one. Envision how it will change as soon as we have noise in the RF domain. Then it's getting interesting. And we listened this morning during Peter's presentation about noise. Noise in the audio domain. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the same for RF. It's just a different frequency range. It's a little higher. Basically, it's the same. To have the speech intelligibility, I need a certain amount of signal-to-noise ratio to understand it. In the RF domain, same, but slightly different because now we are talking about carrier-to-noise ratio. But it's the same. Okay, so, and here are the physical limits. Here is higher data rate, so means here this is a higher data rate, this is data rate, and this is carrier-to-noise, carrier-to-interference ratio. So if I increase, for instance, from 200 kilobit per second, I need approximately 10 dB of carrier-to-noise ratio in the RF domain. And if I increase this to, let's say, 1,000, 1 megabit per second, I need 20 dB of carrier-to-noise in ratio in the RF domain. Let me ask one question. What is impacting the carrier-to-noise ratio in the RF domain? Okay. Yes, please. I'm sorry?
Whatever else is in the spectrum around.
Whatever else is in the spectrum. TV broadcasters.
Other wireless mics.
Wireless microphones. Intercoms. Cameras. Walkie-talkies. Cell phones. The environment. It's different. It's definitely different here in Montreal compared to Old Lyme, Connecticut. So, if you go to Manhattan at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, the noise floor in the RF domain, which is inherent, is higher than 2 o'clock in the morning. Think about that. Okay, so what is this? This is a floor. This is my noise floor. That was funny. For a German engineer, that was so funny. Not funny, man. So, okay, this is my noise floor. Let's assume for the next 2.5 minutes, this noise floor stays the same. And we assume that I need approximately 20 dB of carrier-to-noise ratio to detect the signal in a quality that I can work with it on the receiver side. This is my carrier, this is my noise. Here is my receiving antenna. Which kind of measures do I have to increase the carrier to noise floor? Increase transmission power. Perfect. Not, because two things are against this. One is regulation, 50 milliwatt, maximum 250 milliwatt in some countries. The other one is battery lifetime is a challenge. Yes?
Both transmitting and receiving antenna placements.
Both antenna placements. You know what? If I get receiving antenna closer to the transmit antenna, bingo, that's cool. Unfortunately, this is very often such kind of challenge because we are talking a wireless microphone. So if I have to stand all the time here, so I cannot walk around. So what will happen if this is my receiving antenna? The carrier is going down as soon as inverse square law. We heard about that. Didn't we talk about that? It was something which we heard this morning in audio. Sorry, it's the same here. So what we can do is antenna placement, the right antenna which we have to pick, antenna boosters if need to be, very rare case I'm traveling with, RF cable to reduce loss over the cable run, such kind of things. So this is important. What do you think? What is an acceptable carrier to interference ratio for an FM signal? Mono, wireless microphone, professional. approximately, so we say in general something around 12 dB. And now it's getting really tricky. Because if you have 12 dB in an FM link, it is different compared to a digital world. So what you see here is audio signal to noise ratio over RF signal strength in dBm. So, in general, an analog transmitter, an analog system behaves like as soon as the RF signal strength is going down, the audio signal to noise ratio is going down as well. So if we are now talking 10 dB of carrier to interference, carrier to noise ratio in the RF domain for a FM transmitter, we will hear already something like in the background. This would be, under normal circumstances, not acceptable. But usually you plan your system with 25, 30 dB of carrier to noise as a minimum, and from time to time some drops, some notches will come into play, and then you hear from time to time a little bit like ch-ch-ch. This is not bad. It's bad, but it's working. Okay? So, digital system, completely different. Because the digital system is okay, 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 up to here, and then, boof, falling from the cliff. And then it's done. And the interesting portion, it does not announce itself. Hello, I'm getting really bad here. The analog system does this because it announces, hey, psh, 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 you want to do something, psh, get your talent psh, back, psh, fast. Okay? The good thing is, with a digital system, I don't have this effect of the signal-to-noise ratio in the analog domain is going down. The good thing is, here, I can look at the bit error rate and say, okay, if this is going up, I have some issue. I want to do something. Antenna placement and the usual stuff then. Because we are again talking about analog transmission over the air, even if we are transmitting a digital coded word. But in general, it is analog transmission. So this difference is significant for the user, and we have to get used to it. Now, two things come into play. If I have such kind of short dropouts, I can recover them. Bit error correction. Error correction, basically. So this is what the big advantage is. I can look back into the past and say, okay, this time, in this sample, I do not have a signal, so I predict it is very similar to the one before. And it's working. And especially it's working when there is no information whatsoever. So this is the big advantage of digital transmission. Okay, so I'm pretty good in time. So ladies and gentlemen, we are here. If you have any questions, so more than happy to answer them at any time. Thank you very much for having us and hope to see you. Thanks.
Thank you, brilliant. Thank you for that. Thank you.